Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the boxing news podcast. My name is Matt Christie, and again, I'm joined by my colleague John Dennan.
Hello.
It's a sunny Friday in the central London. You're looking forward to the weekend, John?
I am. It's been a mental week, though, so I could do with a bit of a break.
Should we talk about that first? Let's talk about that first. Why has it been a mental week? And let's focus specifically on the events of March 11.
Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao press conference stretched into the night. The only press conference in the build-up to the mega fight. Obviously, there'll be stuff going on in fight week. I know there's not quite a relatively short period of time before the big fight, but I'm sort of surprised they're only doing one big press event like that, because it's such a huge event for boxing. You'd think they'd be sort of selling it a little bit harder to try and get more.
Do you think they're taking their superstardom for granted a little? They're a little presumptuous that all they've got to do is fight and this will break all box office records as predicted.
Well, I mean, they're probably right in that all they need to do is be in the same, you know, all they need to do is look at each other in the same room at the same time to get the world's attention. But to make it as absolutely huge as it could be, you'd think you should pull out all the stops. But maybe in reality, because it was such a protracted process to make the deal, they only had sort of a couple of months to train. Maybe they just couldn't afford to spare the time out of a training camp to do like a press tour.
Yeah, it's true. What did you, I watched it, Mayweather, a little more subdued perhaps than I expected, a little quieter than usual, and in contrast, Pacquiao a little more lively, a little more mischievous than normal. Anything to read into that at this early stage?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I agree, because the press conferences I've seen with Pacquiao before, he sort of stood up, said one thing, waved everyone and been off. He was a little bit more forthcoming, and yeah, like you say, Mayweather was a little less chipper than you thought he might be at a press conference. I don't know what to read into that. You know, some people say Mayweather looked nervous. I don't know. He seemed almost emotional, because the Mayweather fight I've been to was the Victor Ortiz one, and he won it quite easily with a sucker punch in the end. But he was quite emotional in the press conference afterwards about how hard he had been training and all this. So he just seemed, I don't know if the emotion of the moment was getting to him a little bit. I don't think he was nervous or afraid. Or maybe just the whole rigmarole of, you know, walking down a red carpet, being interviewed by 600 members of the media, taking its toll by the time he actually got to the sort of showpiece bit of the press conference.
Are you more excited as a result of the press conference? Has your excitement level remained ludicrously high, or has it dipped a little bit? What did that press conference do for you as kind of a real hardcore boxing man?
It hasn't. My excitement remains high, though it hasn't sort of boosted it. I could have done with a little bit more. You know, Freddie Roach was the only person who got a bit of trash talk in there, saying he was going to kick his ass. I could have done with a little bit more trash talk to ramp it up a bit. They were both quite respectful. Mayweather took a sort of a gentle dig at him with, reminding him of that, you know, his losses were in his mind. But that was about as close to the bone as it got. So it wasn't unentertaining, but it wasn't, you know.
You mentioned the word respectful. There's obviously going to be a lot of mutual respect there, and perhaps that's why. But there didn't. Although I got it's been so long in the making, so infuriatingly long in the making. I got a bit of a buzz just from seeing them there together. But for the neutral fan. Perhaps it didn't have, you know, for example, the whole reason why Froch and Groves took off was that very, very real grudge and animosity that neither of them could really contain when they were around each other. These two, being respectful, although I'm not a big fan of distasteful trash talking, as it were, Was it a missed opportunity in a way for Mayweather and Pacquiao to kind of gain some more interest?
Yeah, maybe. There seemed a little bit more hate between them when they weren't fighting one another. And maybe that will bubble back to the surface as we get closer to the fight itself. It is compelling because there is a lot at stake and a lot to be gained for whichever of them wins. But maybe they're just relieved that the fight was finally happening and that they were both sort of, you know, they got to that point where they were actually doing it. You know, and it was pretty exciting to see them standing on a stage staring into each other's eyes. It kind of confirmed that it wasn't all just a dream, that it was really happening.
Conventional logic tells us Mayweather will win this. Has that conventional logic been tested at all? I think that, I mean, I kind of answer my own question here. I'm almost getting tired of asking it. When I first asked you, what was your reaction to it, you see, I don't know what to read into it. Sometimes we're guilty of trying to read too much into things when there's nothing there to read, really. But just from Pacquiao's confidence and the fact he did seem absolutely, he seemed more up for it than he did for other fights, for example, at this stage. Do we think that we're going to see a return to vintage Pacquiao? Has he got it in him, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so.
Like 2009 Manny Pacquiao?
Maybe not quite that, but he certainly that confidence does ring through. So I think most people would probably favour Mayweather to win. But just seeing how confident and relaxed Pacquiao is, maybe that's going to start sowing, you know, helping people or some people tilt the other way a little bit. You know, and it's certainly, you know, it's not. Even if Mayweather's the favourite, it's not an easy call, is it? You can make a strong case for how Pacquiao could do it.
Exactly. We'll talk at length, obviously, in the coming weeks about Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. Closer to home, Paul Butler had his opportunity to win a second world title. And he fell short in the end. He was outclassed, wasn't he, by Zelani Tete? He was masterful. He came up against someone, I mean, you and I didn't expect Tete. We knew that it was no easy ask for Paul Butler, but we didn't think Tete was that good.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought and think that Butler is quality, but Tete just looked that next level above. Like, you know, you think at all Southpaw is going to be awkward, but he used all his advantages so well, and just it didn't seem like there was anything Butler could do to sort of get around that jab. It was so hard for Butler to get inside, and you know the shots he picked out to stop it were excellent. He looked absolutely class, Tete.
He did, as Paul Wheeler said in the opening paragraph of his excellent report, which is available in this week's magazine. He said he was as equally impressed because Paul was also ringside for Gennady Golovkin beating Martin Murray. He was equally impressed with Tete as he was with Golovkin in terms of the beatdown, the efficiency. It was that kind of a thrashing, wasn't it?
Yeah, to an extent.
But it was,
you know,
it was
Golovkin was sort of more brutal. He's just sort of more explosive.
It was tough. It was tough though to give Butler a round, wasn't it? Of the completed rounds.
Yeah. It was a comprehensive performance. But you know, Golovkin beats Tete though.
Oh, well, I don't know. Okay, let's look into future for Paul Butler. Although it was one-sided and comprehensive, there can be no question mark about who was the better man on the night. It also wasn't the kind of career-ending kind of loss, or I didn't think it was anyway. A lot to learn. What does Paul Butler do now? He's operated at world level for the last 12 months now or so. Does he need to go back down to domestic level? Has he proven himself to be a top 10 world guy? Or, I mean, what's the ideal next steps for Paul Butler because he's talented, isn't he? He's really, really talented.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, and he's, you know, he's not old. What, 26?
He's 26.
So he's got plenty of time. So it's got to be a case of working his way back to world level. You know, against the other British guys, obviously there are people around at his weight, like Cal Yafai or Jamie Conlon, which would be good fights to make. Maybe difficult with, you know, Yafai's with a different promoter to Butler. So you'd think with, you know, to sort of bridge that gap, maybe you'd need a world title or something on the line. So yeah, it might be hard for him to. It might be difficult just to drop back to domestic level and find decent guys to fight. I think he's got to work his way back to world class. I see no reason why he can't do it, but you know, there's no rush. Time is on his side. You don't want a rematch with Tete, do you? That style is just kryptonite to him, really. But I was also surprised by how much bigger Tete looked.
Yeah, it was noticeable straight away, wasn't it?
Butler won his world title at bantamweight, and yet Tete just, you know, just looks, yeah, he seems so much taller and stronger. I don't know if Butler could drop down even further.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, I was going to say, is a new weight class the answer? He said that, you know, he went to bantamweight and he won the world title, but he said that didn't suit him. He's too small for that. Because it's super flight, it must be quite disheartening. Paul Butler certainly has got ambitions about being the best in the world. It must be disheartening to kind of be operating in the same division where somebody has just given you such a comprehensive beating. It might be difficult in terms of confidence. I think we saw that perhaps with Nathan Cleverley, in that he was beaten in four rounds by Sergei Kovalev. And even though the jump to cruiserweight clearly wasn't the right move for him, the catalyst for that was obviously the fact that Kovalev was still there. So almost, what's the point in being at light heavyweight if I can't beat that guy?
Yeah.
Is there any mileage in that for Paul Butler?
As in dropping down?
Dropping down or moving back up?
Yeah, I think if it's possible to, because I think moving back up, if he was that much smaller than Tete, then you know he's already kind of and he's already admitted that bantamweight isn't the division for him.
Yeah.
So it'd be a case of making up for that size disadvantage with his skill level. If you can drop down, that might be a good way to reset. Because it's tough at super flyweight. The Japanese world champion is lurking out there.
That'd be a good fight, though, wouldn't it, for the hardcore fan against Tete?
Yeah.
How good is Tete? Is there a chance that we could be overrating him now as a consequence of that performance? Because I've seen a few of his fights before, only on the internet, but he seemed to have improved quite substantially with that showing against Butler. Is he that good? Is he as good as he looked on that night? Because sometimes performances like that turn out to be a bit of an aberration.
I don't know, because he was so much better than I was expecting. I'm sort of tempted, I'd probably be tempted to say, yeah, that's just the sort of, you know, the true world class level he's at.
He's going to be one to watch, isn't he? He's certainly one to watch. Also, speaking of world class, we had Derry Matthews on the undercard, kind of marking time before his shot at Richard Brill. That, again, has got, no offence to Derry Matthews, anybody that's been lucky enough to listen to this nonsense for for the last 12 months or so will have heard me champion Derry Matthews for a world title shot quite some time ago.
I think you need to take credit for this, Matt. You've been beating this. You
I did. I'm pretty sure I did start the Derry Matthews for a world title campaign. But anyway, it does. It looks like a massive, massive, massive jump up to Richard Brill, doesn't it, for Derry Matthews?
And also, sort of, you know, especially in light of the sort of Tete fight, if a guy you actually rate, you know, who's already a proven world champion, can suddenly find himself, at, you know, completely outboxed at that world title level. Does make you think Derry Matthews is going to have to be, you know, completely inspired in Abril to have a really bad day for for him to pull off a victory. You lose faith sometimes that sort of fairy tales can happen in boxing, and the just the cruel realities of the better guy winning on the night, even though it's at home for Derry.
Frank Warren, one senses, is due an upset win, perhaps, or is due one of his British stars to kind of come good. I've heard and read him come in for a little bit of criticism, which I think is completely unjust, incidentally, but with the fact that he brought Kovalev over for cleverly. Obviously the Paul Butler took a paste in his Derek Chisora, was hammered by Tyson Fury. Is Frank Warren doing anything wrong?
I think that's unfair, because, you know, you want to see guys fighting, you know, the best available. That's what you want from boxing. You want to see people challenging the best in their division. So I think the criticism that promoters sort of protecting his guys or keeping them away from the serious fights, you know, is a worse criticism than getting them home advantage to take on the best in the division. You want to see the best boxers in the world fighting, and if they're coming over here to do it, that's good for British boxing fans. It's just, you know, it's just tough at the top. A loss doesn't have to be the end of the world. It's better to see our guys, you know, try and compete with the very best than just fight each other or be too protected. So it's just, I think that's a little bit unfair.
Wise words,
really?
John.
I rarely say wise things, Matt.
You do now and again. Let's focus on the build that was in Las Vegas on NBC in the USA on the television broadcaster NBC, free to air. I'm not sure of the viewing figures, but certainly quite a few will have seen Keith Thurman. They will have been very impressed, I think. What does that do for Keith Thurman's profile? It was kind of one of those one-sided but completely enthralling fights. Guerrero was never being dominated, but you sensed he wasn't going to win. But the manner of Keith Thurman's victory was, I thought, impressive. He dropped Guerrero. And, you know, some have started to compare it to how Floyd Mayweather fared against Guerrero, which was a bit of a boxing masterclass. It was a different kind of performance. But that's a really, really... First of all, let's take the broadcasters out of it to start off with. Just in boxing circles, that's a really, really strong performance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite a statement.
Yeah, exactly. I think he proved he's sort of the real deal. Well, you know, a real deal at welterweight. He's definitely more than just a big punch, even though he does have that power. It's good that he got a, you know, relatively big audience. I think it was over 3 million on average, which seems pretty good. I don't think you can just, you know, he can just have that fight on NBC and suddenly he's the next, you know, suddenly he's ready for a Floyd Mayweather fight. I think he needs to keep doing things like this to build up his profile a little bit more, to become slightly more of a mainstream star. But doing what he's doing, maybe if he could go around and, you know, beat some people that Mayweather's beaten, but beat them and, you know, take them out in more explosive style, that would earn him a shot at Mayweather. So, you know,
is he up at that level? Yeah, obviously he's not at the level of a Mayweather or a Pacquiao in terms of his accomplishments, but do you think that's a feasible level for him to aim at? Could he be one of... Because, I mean, whether he gets to fight Mayweather or Pacquiao or not, both of those guys clearly are very close to the end of their careers. The sport is going to be crying out for a new star. Does Thurman fit the bill? Is he talented enough? He certainly seems to be charismatic enough.
Yeah, he's got the personality. I don't know yet if he's, and he is talented. Is he that talented to be sort of, you know, to be considered the best, like pound for pound? I don't know. Like, if he fought Amir Khan, which would be a great fight, would he win?
Good question. Would he?
You know, I think I,
I think Khan outboxes him, but the problem is if Khan gets drawn in and someone punches with him, he's got the power to hurt Amir Khan. So he could get outboxed for 11 rounds, but then land his Hail Mary punch and...
It's good night, Vienna.
Huh?
And it's good night, Vienna.
It's good night, Vienna. But again, but you know, so it's like, you know, so exactly, so I think in the, you know, in just his division, there are boxers out there with, on just, you know, take out the power, just in terms of boxing skill, are probably better than him. But someone, you know, someone's got to take over from Mayweather and Pacquiao sooner or later.
There's not an obvious successor out there, is there, at the moment, which is perhaps a little concerning for the sport. But it kind of goes in cycles, and you know, while, for example, Oscar De La Hoya was at his pomp, while, you know, De La Hoya was earning more money than anyone, Floyd Mayweather wasn't an obvious next superstar. You know, he didn't start earning the big money until he beat De La Hoya.
He was doing all right.
I think he was doing it. I don't think he was struggling. I don't think he was struggling. But that is certainly, without question, the fight that was kind of the roots, that were the roots of his superstardom. But someone else who was on this bill, someone who I admittedly thought, we spoke about him a lot, was following in Floyd Mayweather's footsteps and had the talent to back it up as well, was Adrian Broner. Whereas Keith Thurman took this opportunity and made the most of it, Adrian Broner has been accused of doing the opposite, although he won. Yeah. Is it just too easy to criticise Adrian Broner because he's Adrian Broner?
Well, you know, yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's invalid criticism. As in, you know, he was given this platform, it's a great showcase, and he did enough, and he seemed quite happy that he'd done enough. But with those kind of opportunities, you want, you know, if you want to become a superstar, you've got to really go for it. So yeah, we criticise Adrian Broner a lot, but then he does do a lot to justify the criticism.
Did you see, we spoke about Adrian Broner last week, we're both a little bit doubtful that he could go on to achieve what we initially thought he could. Did you see anything there that suggests that there's still, I mean, it's easy to forget this guy's won quite a few world titles already. He's already done a lot. He's already done a lot more than 99.9% of boxers could ever dream of, quite frankly. But it's not what we expected. And all of a sudden it's gone wrong since the Marcus Maidana fight. It seems to have completely, although it hasn't changed his personality outside the ring, it's certainly changed his ring persona. Did you see anything in his performance to suggest that actually he can go on and be a great fighter?
Yeah, as in, you know, at light welterweight, if he actually makes the weight, he's a pound over for this. He's very hard for anyone to beat, but he's not going to be. But he didn't do anything to dissuade it to make you think he's going to be as good as you know, when he was blitzing people at lightweight, you know, as good as what you thought he was going to be back then.
Yeah,
that makes grammatical sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, so he slipped down a bit in people's estimation, but that's from a position where he had huge potential to obviously a position where you think he can be a really good champion, but not one of those sort of breakout leading lights for the sport.
Because the difference in kind of how the boxing world views him is astonishing. And that I remember watching, either staying up or getting up in the early hours to watch him beat the hell out of Gavin Rees. And at that point you thought, and okay, Gavin Rees was not a world champion. He was a former world champion, let's not forget. And he was certainly a legitimate top 10 world contender at that point. But he beat him with such ease that you sensed that there was something special. It does seem to be the case now that he made a huge mistake jumping up in weight, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And also, as we've said before, that he hasn't learned the lessons from his
from his loss, you know, a loss doesn't have to be the end of the world, but it depends on how you react to it. And, you know, people are obsessed about having an unbeaten world record and protecting it. You know, there is an aura about being undefeated, as, you know, as Mayweather exploits. I think if Mayweather were to lose against Pacquiao, the view of Mayweather would shift quite dramatically. That's very important to his persona. And when Broner was trying to be the next Mayweather, and people wanted him to be the next Mayweather, he had to protect that. You know, he had to be undefeated for that sort of whole image to work. Now he's lost that. He's actually got to. He's got to, you know, get that faith back in him, and just sort of doing just enough isn't.
But has he got a point at the end of the, you know, they're all booing him at the end, and he said something along the lines of, "Look, I won every round. What do you want from me?" Has he got a point?
To an extent, but what people want is, you know, more excitement. So, you know, to see you go for it, and people, you know, people. He does get attention. But I think at the moment that's from people wanting him to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. People over in Macau certainly didn't want Zhu Shiming to lose. That's exactly what happened, though.
I think we were all surprised that he didn't get a hometown decision.
Which is good for boxing. I'll be honest, I haven't seen that, so I won't pass too much judgment. But first of all, so it was a fair decision.
Oh yeah,
it would have been unheard of for that to be a bad decision, wouldn't it?
Well, as in, yeah, ruin wrong.
Yeah, to get a dodgy verdict over in Macau.
What?
It would be unheard of for Shiming to be on the wrong end of a dodgy decision in Macau, wouldn't it? So what I'm saying was that was the right decision.
Yeah, very much.
When you were watching it live, when it got to the end of the 12 rounds? Did you think, right, they're going to give this to Shiming?
Yeah.
Completely convinced.
Yeah. I just...
Was it close enough a fight for that, or was it just not a 120, 108 type fight?
Oh, as in, you know, it was a fair decision, and, you know, I'm pronouncing his name right? Ruin Roeng?
Say it again.
Nat Ruin Roeng?
That's what you sound like after about five beers.
Well, I've only had three, so... doing well. He won it well, you know, so and so, but Shiming was going forward and not managing to connect with March and getting caught. But, you know, there have been, I'm sad to say, worse decisions in boxing, and you just sort of feared that just because Zhu was the guy going forward, and there must be so much pressure on the judges from that, you know, he's got huge support out there. And he is boxing in China. That he's the reason why we've been seeing these big events in Macau. Pacquiao's fought in Macau, so there's sort of, you know, there's a lot invested in Zhu Shiming doing well, winning a world title.
It's refreshing then, right?
Absolutely, like fantastic to see that the judges can sort of block out all the, you know, all those external factors and just concentrate on the fight and just score the fight. I mean, that's the way it should always be, but all too often it's, you know, it's not.
Freddie Roach, you spoke to Freddie Roach, we spoke a bit about that last week, and there's some, you know, some good articles up on our website, still worth reading now, even after the event, about his opinions on Zhu Shiming. One of the things that he did say was that he thought that when he first saw Zhu Shiming, he thought he was going to be a world champion within two fights. Is he going to be a world champion at all?
I don't know. I think it's going to be very, you know, because time's not on his side. Can he get out of the sort of amateurish habits of a lifetime? Because as an amateur, sort of going forward was never his style. That's sort of what you need to do to win 12 round fights. You can't just sort of, you know, pick up a few points and be awkward alone. So yeah, it's, you know, it's possible if they can find the right champion or the right opportunity, but it's gonna, you know, it's very, it's hard to see how
Shimin gets, you know, gets back to a world title from here, unless they do it. I mean, because a rematch with Ruin Ryan.
Yeah, say his name again.
You know, a rematch with Amnat. You know, I don't see Shimin winning it, though he can probably learn from it and do better. So if I had to say now, I'd say no, but you know, he could, you know, with Freddie Roach in his corner, he could engineer a dramatic turnaround.
That was a very elaborate fence sitting, which I admire.
Well, no, I reluctantly said no. But the problem, okay, so I sum it up more briefly. I'm going to say no, but when you've got a big promoter behind you, they can find opportunities for you, so I think he will have more chances.
Okay.
So why didn't I just say that in the first place?
I don't know. I often think that, to be honest.
I've got lots of stuff on my mind, Matt. I'm just trying to communicate to the world.
Okay, the other big bill we'll talk about before we move on to the weekend's action was in Hull. And it was a strange old fight between Tommy Coyle and Martin Gethin. Really strange fight. On paper, Tommy Coyle stops Martin Gethin in 5 rounds, looks okay. It wasn't quite that simple though, was it?
No, he really had to. He got clattered early on, once again put down, managed to get up, managed to sort of work his way back into the fight, and then so I was just watching at home. Cut to commercials, comes back to the show, and it's been waved off, and Gethin's pulled out. The whole thing looked weird.
It did look weird. It's done. I mean, I know you can completely understand where Matchroom are coming from in that they're building this Luke Campbell versus Tommy Coyle showdown, obviously with the whole setting. You can see why that would be a big ticket seller there. But it's getting increasingly hard to make a case for a Tommy Coyle victory, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, before this fight, I didn't think Tommy would beat Luke Campbell. And I think after their respective performances, because Campbell, you know, looks excellent, you know, and really like sharp and dangerous as well against Levis Morales.
See, you've been practicing that one.
You know, and Tommy again looked vulnerable. So that's the problem with waiting too long for these kind of things from a marketing point of view. As in, you know, once Tommy had leveled Michael Katsidis, that was probably the time to do this fight. It's a big fight in Hull, you know, and actually like the atmosphere there is great. Tommy Coyle's got good support, and they love Luke Campbell up there. So the atmosphere at those shows has been great, so it would be a sort of good event in Hull, but you know, outside of that, and now everyone's going to be looking at it and expecting a routine victory for Luke Campbell.
That does seem to be the case. In Coyle's favour, though, he has developed a habit of kind of winning when it looks like he may not.
Yeah, he's really been in deep, suffered, and shown he's got the sort of heart to fight his way through it and find a way to win, which is, you know, which is important to have that sort of, you know, to know that however up against it you are, that it's still possible to find a way through and to get through it. But
and Campbell hasn't had that, has he? Really, in professional boxing.
Yeah, but then there's a reason he hasn't had that. Like, you know, it's pretty hard to hit. And he's, you know, and he's not like the things he's done as an amateur, those kind of little, you know, you go around those little tournaments on the sort of lesser European circuit. So you're out in Bulgaria and Hungary fighting top internationals in these sort of, small tournaments where everything's in favour of the Eastern Europeans who can fight anyway. And like, you know, Campbell went round, won all of those, and was getting best boxers of those tournaments. It's sort of really hard to do the things he did as an amateur. So
you do love Luke Campbell, don't you?
Is he the best prospect in the country at the moment?
I would say so.
Yeah,
is Joshua perhaps?
Yeah, but I reckon because Campbell's so much more of an experienced amateur, and he's like, you know, obviously Joshy was a brilliant prospect too, but Campbell's got that, you know, more experience, very sort of slick high level of skill. He doesn't have, you know, Joshua's got that tremendous power. Where Campbell's been a revelation as a professional is that he's actually hitting hard, which, you know, when you saw him in the
amateurs,
it wasn't like knocking people.
He's certainly, you mentioned Zhu Shiming, didn't you, in that it's obvious that perhaps the transition from amateur to professional maybe just came too late. Yeah. Zhu Shiming too, but Luke Campbell has really hit the ground running at professional level. He looks like he was born to be a professional boxer, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then, but that's also like, you know, Zhu Shiming was older, and with some of these, you know, some of these top guys, you know, they can hit without getting hit, and they can adapt to the style that they need to win.
Yeah.
So Luke Campbell sort of mastered that tournament boxing style where you want to be counter punching and not taking too much damage. You know, he didn't actually need to sort of go forward and attack that, you know, that much when he had the lead, even though he did sometimes. Whereas in professionals, it's different. You've got to be a little bit more aggressive, especially if there's you're in there with someone to survive. But I think some of the top guys, they show they can, you know, they can adapt. So it's not always the case that sort of someone who's mastered the amateur style isn't gonna master the pros. I think James DeGale, again, people maybe thought as an amateur style wouldn't be that suited to the pros,
yeah.
But I think those top level boxers really can adapt to do what they needed to win.
You mentioned James DeGale. There's been some news this week that it looks like he's going to go out to Al Haymon won purse bids for his.
Well, technically, it was Warriors Boxing.
Yeah, okay.
Where their $3 million funding came from.
Who knows? And so he's going to go out to America to fight Andre Durrell. I thought that's a tough fight. Perhaps the one thing going in his favour is the fact that Durrell hasn't really operated at world level for a long time.
Yeah.
Whereas DeGale has kind of been busy, he's been impressive. But does that put a different spin on things, the fact that it's in America?
Yeah, I think even in England, that's a really hard fight. Durrell's really good. And I think it's interesting that he's really good in areas that normally DeGale would have the better of someone, like in terms of speed and skill. That's where Durrell can match him. And yeah, it gets even, at least if he was going to have home advantage, that would at least, that could have been key. Now it gets even harder. But I do think DeGale, like he's been, his recent fights, he's looked like he's hitting quite hard and quite dangerous. And he seems quite tough and resilient. So he's right up against it. But I wouldn't pick against him.
You wouldn't pick against DeGale?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. Well, again, we'll talk about that one closer to the time. Let's move on. Time slightly against us. So let's move on to what's going on this weekend. Let's focus on, if you're picking this up, you're listening to this on Friday, we've got Andre Berto in, I think it's safe to say, very much a crossroads battle against Josecito Lopez. Berto, I remember prior to working for Boxing News, and at that point I was working for KOTV. And I remember seeing a lot of, I would always make an effort to put Berto's fights on the show. I was really impressed with him. And the year-end awards that we put together, we gave Berto Prospect of the Year. Although he went on to become a world champion, he's never fulfilled the potential I thought he had. And how old is he now? He's 31. One would suggest he's highly unlikely to now. Is that fair?
Yeah. Like, I think with Josecito Lopez, it's a really tough fight for him. You know, I don't think he's going to win.
Really? You'd pick Lopez?
But okay, for the purpose of this podcast, I would pick Lopez. Maybe if your mortgage was dependent on it, I wouldn't. But I don't know. Lopez, I think he throws quite a lot of punches, doesn't he, Lopez? He's taken a few pace things, but he's quite decent.
Yeah, well, he came up. I mean, because
it's like a crossroads fight where they're both on the way down.
Because the thing that surprised me with Berto is that he lost to Jesus Soto Carras. That was a really surprising result for me. In hindsight, perhaps it shouldn't have been. But this is a similar. Yeah. It's a similar level of opponent. Similar level of chaos he'll face in the ring. Berto is talking a good game again. But you think Lopez?
With no confidence, because also has Berto looked great in his last couple of fights? Because he's with Virgil Hunter now, and maybe what happened with Khan? Amir Khan looked a bit shaky for his first couple of fights with Virgil Hunter, and then it all just clicked into place. Yeah. Maybe this will be the time it clicks into place. But with no great confidence, I might pick Lopez because he just seems. Yeah, tough, rugged, decent, active, and Berto's hittable. Tough, but hittable.
I do like a wild John Dennen prediction because they often turn out to be not that wild after all. And
you know,
perhaps often is too strong a word. Sporadically. So what would you
Everyone's
go?
Everyone's right 28% of the time. So if you pick randomly.
If people were going to. Go with the John Denham bet this week and pick Lopez.
House on Lopez. Everything, all in.
Yeah, what round?
Oh, I think it'll be a points victory.
You think it'll be a points victory? Points victory for Josecito Lopez.
Bet everything.
Says John Denham. Bet everything.
God, what if people take me seriously?
That's up to them, isn't it? That's up to them.
Okay, I think John Denham predictions has come with some kind of health warning.
Okay, let's move to there's one of the emerging stars, Sergey Kovalev, is fighting on Saturday night against Jean Pascal. Rarely in a dull fight, Jean Pascal, but tough to see him. And you know, let's not forget Jean Pascal. He beat Chad Dawson. I think an underrated fighter if you look at what Jean Pascal has done. His only losses came to Karl Froch in a very entertaining fight, I would believe 2008. And he lost to Bernard Hopkins after they had a draw a few years ago, where perhaps he was kind of outsighted by the mental wizardry of old man Hopkins. I really like the look of this fight. But you can't pick Pascal, can you? Or can crazy old John Dennen do that?
even crazy old John Dennen isn't picking Pascal.
Okay.
I think like Kovalev, even though he didn't knock out Bernard Hopkins, he did look like even more. You know, he was already impressive for his sort of power punching. He showed he could really box. So yeah, Pascal could be in a world of trouble, as much as I like Pascal.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think what you've said there is exactly right. He really did add layers to his reputation. Although he didn't go out there, and even though early on it looked like Hopkins wasn't going to last the first round or the first couple of rounds, he was taking a real shellacking. But by the fact that he went 12 rounds, and at the final bell, some people were wishing that Hopkins had been pulled out because of the beating he took in that last round.
Yeah, I'd be in that camp.
but by doing that, by showing he could go the full 36 minutes, he kind of won over, you know, a few doubters that remained.
This is still a
what's
good
Pascal's
fight
best chance? It is. It certainly is. What's Pascal's best chance of victory here?
Oh, that's good. I hadn't even thought about that, Matt.
He's got Roy Jones in him. What on earth can... Pascal used to kind of idolise Roy Jones. I remember seeing things, you know, when Pascal was kind of on the way up, kind of a quite highly touted prospect, and very often... And he would often be compared to Roy Jones in that... But he's no Roy Jones. What do we do? What do we do to beat Sergey Kovalev if we're Jean Pascal and Roy Jones?
I guess you've just got to, you know, spend most of your time running for it, throw some wild combinations, hopefully
which
land
Pascal
a few
can
shots,
do.
Run for it, and then you know, at least he's got a home advantage. So
you know, just try and be patient and not engage too much and, you know, don't get caught. But I think once Kovalev catches him, he's in trouble.
Kovalev has got a similar reputation in the boxing world to Gennady Golovkin. Does Pascal have a better chance of upsetting Kovalev than Martin Murray had of upsetting Golovkin?
I don't think so, because, you know, Murray was big for the weight. I thought his defence would be pretty solid, though as it turned out, just Golovkin blasted through him. You know, I'm not sure. Pascal doesn't have the sort of size and strength advantages, and Golovkin had been sort of looking spectacular the way he'd been taking people out, but Kovalev's not only, you know, looked dangerous and good, he's, you know, he's got 3 world titles, so he's like a, you know, he's the established division leader. I don't know. I wouldn't like to fight Kovalev.
Would you rather fight Kovalev or Golovkin?
Kovalev.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I think they'd both kill me, but I'd probably die a little bit more slowly against Kovalev.
Oh, well, you'd really get to cherish your final moments.
Say goodbye to the world. Yeah, actually, maybe I should just pick Golovkin to put me out of my misery instantaneously. Beterbiev, though, he's good at light heavyweight. Artur Beterbiev, he's serious.
He is. He got dropped in his last fight, though, didn't he? But, yeah, Kovalev, I would rather... I mean, okay, for the sake of boxing history and unifying the title, Kovalev Stevenson remains one of... you know, the most desirable fight out there for boxing fans, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd be fascinated to see Kovalev against Beterbiev, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Kovalev, Beterbiev, then the winner of that fight, Stevenson.
Okay, so what are we going for then in the Kovalev-Pascal fight? Pascal, don't think he's been dropped, has he? Or has he, actually? I think he has on the way up. I'm sure I've seen him dropped, Pascal.
I'm going to have to do a quick fact check.
I'm sure I've seen him dropped on the way up in a 10-rounder. He was on ESPN.
Okay, but he's tough, Pascal. He's
yeah, not, so do are we expecting this to be another 12 rounds for Kovalev?
I don't know, because even though I think Pascal's tough, I think he's probably not quite elusive enough, so I think Kovalev might be the first person to stop him. So basically it's going to be interesting to see if Kovalev can make another big statement in this fight. He probably can.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's expecting him to win. Not everybody was expecting him to beat Hopkins, but everybody's expecting him to win. So to make a statement, he has to really impress, doesn't he? Yeah. You think he will?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, anything else we need to talk about before we go?
Not boxing related or just other issues?
Whatever really.
Well, you know, I've got a lot on my mind.
Maybe now's not the time, actually, thinking about it.
You sure?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been watching.
We'll have a beer after work. We'll have a beer after work. Okay, listen, everybody, thank you so much for listening. That will do it for this week. We'll be back next week with yet another opening bell. Thanks for all your support and thanks for listening.